Welcome to my podcast, Musings of a Christian Philosopher, where we talk about deep and often challenging topics of theology and philosophy. I'm your host, Adam Polstra. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to re-enter a previous topic, and that topic is the Churchian view of judgment. In the previous episode where I talked about this concept, it has primarily to do with when Jesus made the statement, "Judge not, lest you also be judged." Now, when I talked about that originally, I was pointing out the fact that Jesus then follows up that statement saying, "For the measure that you use upon others, or the measure rather that you use, it will be measured back to you." If I remember rightly, he doesn't even use the phrase "upon others." That's just typically kind of implied. And it is that implication and non-existence of the words, if that is the case, that really makes the point that I want to make today even stronger. See, the fact of the matter is, as I said before, Jesus is really just pointing out a psychological norm of human beings. Originally, I pointed out that if you have two children, and they're, say, splitting up Halloween candy, one says that, this piece belongs to me because we made such and such a deal. The other one will immediately shoot back, especially if there is good reason to. "No, you're being hypocritical," or probably wouldn't use such a big word, but "no, you have already such and such amount of pieces of this candy, therefore we've already done this deal and you're being unfair." There's already the instinct in children to respond with one judgment, with the same judgment in return. And if they see hypocrisy, if they see a double standard, they're going to point it out, and they're probably going to point it out rather fast. So "judge not, lest you also be judged," does it mean don't judge, or does it simply point out that the typical human way is to reflect back whatever kind of judgment has been used upon the judger and see if their standards are universal? Or perhaps Jesus is bringing up a spiritual norm. And this is how most Churchians kind of see it. If you judge another person, God is going to judge you. And this, of course, comes from his story of the... if I remember rightly, there has been this association made with another set of verses, which I've also used in the previous episode, where Jesus is talking about, "If you don't forgive others, you will not be forgiven." And this, of course, is the story of the two servants. Anyway, the servant doesn't forgive another servant for a small debt. And then the ruler, and this is believed to be the God character, revokes his forgiveness upon the first servant, and he's thrown in jail. And of course, I make emphasis again on the fact that the master revokes his forgiveness. And this is not just me saying things, it's the very fact of his actions that show the fact that he is revoking forgiveness. But I return to the main point. The fact that the master, that is the God character, would revoke judgment, revoke forgiveness, also rather parallels with the idea of "judge not, lest you also be judged." If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. If you judge, you'll be judged. These seem to be rather parallel ideas when it comes to the behavior of God towards his people. That's possible, I suppose. And I would also argue that if it is natural for human beings to reflect upon the judgments made by others and search for hypocrisy, God, of course, is going to do the same. If you make a judgment upon others that such and such a standard must be followed, particularly when it comes to religious standards that are not at all objective, not biblical, not God-issued in any way, God may, in fact, let you have your way, not upon others, but upon yourself. And if you're being a hypocrite, God might be the first one, or at least the first one after death, to point out your hypocrisy and the fact that you are using religious rules to put others under your thumb. Rules that were not rules that he at all put upon us in the first place. So yes, I do think that it is a very wise thing and a very prudent thing to be careful about how we judge. But I don't think there's a prohibition on judgment, just as I don't think that there is a prohibition on not forgiving when there is no repentance. If you want to hear more about how it is that we do release, in a sense, forgive those who do not repent, there's a very recent episode on that subject. Anyways, these have been a bunch of digressions so far. Now to get more towards the meat of the matter today. Judge not lest you also be judged, I think, is a massive hypocrisy in the Churchian understanding based on another Churchian idea and interpretation of Scripture. What is that edict idea, interpretation, whatever you want to call it? It is the Churchian idea of humility. Churchians tend to define humility as a sort of self-abdication or self-deprecation or something like that. Having a low opinion of yourself. Of course, often quoting verses like, you should esteem others higher than yourself. You should not consider yourself more highly than you ought. Both from Paul. But here's the problem. If we define humility as self-deprecation, then when we are engaging in self-deprecation, what are we doing? Oh, I'm not worthy. Oh, I'm not good enough. I can't manage this. Whatever it might be. Look at how humble I am. I'm so low on myself. But if you're stating things like, I'm not worthy, I am not capable, or whatever it is, aren't you making a judgment? Judge not, lest you also be judged. The measure you use, it will be measured back to you. There is another aspect of human nature that I didn't mention the last time this subject was brought up, that I think bears talking about now. When we judge others or ourselves, say in a crowded room, right in the middle of a conversation, say I'm looking at one of my acquaintances and I start judging them rather harshly. And furthermore, let's imagine that I am in my small group where I lead. I'm the founder of this small group that meets every Monday night. And let's say that I am judging somebody very harshly indeed. What have I just done? What I have done is I have set up a social order in which to agree with me is the low pressure option. Everybody else in the room is going to be strongly not just encouraged but incentivized and possibly even threatened if they don't agree with me. Why? Because I'm the leader. I bear that kind of social force in a social group where I am effectively in charge. To go against me is effectively to go against the group. Now, that's not the way that my group is, frankly, and if my group did disagree with me, they would probably do so quite openly, and if I agreed with them, of course, I would agree that I was wrong. But going with the common social groups of today, if I were to do that, not necessarily in my group, but just in any group where I am effectively the head speaker, I am setting up a social pressure to agree. And additionally, every other person who voices similar agreement is going to add to that pressure. This can also go the other way around. Let's say that I was praising somebody else in any said social group where I am the leader, but that person whom I am praising is not actually very good at all. Perhaps it's a girl that I had a crush on, and I just want to consider her such a fine person, not because she is, but because she's hot. Well, everybody else, once again, is going to be pressured to agree with me, first of all, because I'm the leader, but if anybody else also agrees with me, that pressure begins to mount. And the added social pressure to agree will only increase and increase, and very possibly, if I'm again talking about a less mature set of people, If they do disagree, then that is going to be met possibly with harshness, possibly even with scorn. For let's say that I'm calling the person either evil or good in a moral sense. Then for the person, for somebody else in the group to disagree with me is to put themselves onto a moral judgment paradigm. In other words, if I'm calling somebody good and then they say no, in fact, this person is either not good or actually evil, then because I'm considering the person good, if I disagree with them that they are in fact not good, then this person, by making such a judgment, especially if I am a Churchian, I'm going to consider the second person bad or even evil for having disagreed with me on a moral judgment. Now, let's flip it again. Let's say that in a social environment, I make the same sort of judgments about myself. Now, this gets a little bit tricky. If I am to say that I am good or capable or amazing or something like that in a Churchian Christian setting, or specifically just Churchian, then very likely I'm perhaps going to be agreed with to some extent because of social pressure, but I'm also going to be considered rather pompous or flighty or egotistical, because I consider myself so highly, and in a Churchian setting, that's not a very, well, it's a rather taboo thing to do. On the other hand, if I was to be low on myself, if I was to consider myself not necessarily scum, but low in some general sense, an easy example of that is, oh, God does have a call on my life, but I am not worthy. That would probably be met with some sort of agreement and possibly even praise, and in some Churchian settings, very high praise indeed. But that praise, what is that praise? Are they just saying, ooh, good boy, you're so humble? Or are they additionally agreeing with me? And this is what I'm getting at. When you make a public judgment, when you show off your humility and self-deprecation, or when you praise or scorn somebody else in a group, especially if you hold some social pressure, there is the additional factor that I think Jesus is also telling us about, that others are encouraged through social pressure to agree. And very often that social pressure is included with, if you disagree, you will be disliked for disagreeing. So yes, there is a great deal of pressure, once more, to agree with you with whatever sort of judgment you use. So it's not just a matter of hypocrisy, it's a matter of agreement. Be careful about judging, for the measure that you use, it will be also measured on you. In addition, the measure you use, it will be repeated, it will be taken and carried forward. Other people, if they buy into your, maybe it is true, a good, reasonable judgment, maybe it's hypocrisy, maybe it's propaganda, people will take that and move forward with it. Oh, so this is the standard, in the subconscious, we may say. Okay, then I will go forward with your standard of quality, competence, good versus evil, and so on, and basically impress that upon the world around me. And yes, back to you, the original judger, as well. But it's important in this context to point out that it can go rather universally, even more so if you are a leader. The judgment you use is, especially if you are a leader or if you are acknowledged with any kind of respect by those around you, is going to be taken up as a standard. This is something that is even true in our court system today. One of the most convincing arguments that any lawyer can use upon a judge is what we call precedent. If it has been precedent throughout the majority of courts the majority of judge rulings throughout the nation, and you can bring that evidence in a court ruling having similar circumstances, the judge will be the judge will consider that a high standard of argument. And there's a number of reasons for that. But I think one of them is the same kind of social pressure carried interstate, essentially. Often interstate, maybe intrastate, but it doesn't really matter. And granted, I'm not exactly an expert in legal matters, but I do know that the argument of precedent is even used in the Supreme Court. Some of their judgments, in fact, many of their judgments in low and high courts alike, when the judge issues their statement, they very often invoke precedent. And that, of course, implies that if you use it back upon them, precedent will be a very powerful argument indeed. So there's a sort of parallelism. There is a social agreement and a universal standard that is very popular for human beings to use. Now, I think that this can be used for good and ill, absolutely. It is quite important that we have rational, skeptical thinkers in the world because, of course, precedents, universal concepts, agreed-upon standards or paradigms can go very awry and be very wrong indeed. So let's return to my original point. If you consider humility to be self-deprecation. And furthermore, if you then flaunt that self-deprecation around other churchians and they agree with you, are you not falling afoul of judge not lest you also be judged by following humility? In my opinion, these two are flatly contradictory. For you to be humble in this quasi-religious sense is to fall afoul of your other similarly come up with standard of judgment. The only reason why we're blind to the fact is because we are judging ourselves. And like I implied at the beginning of this episode, most people think, and it may be the case in some translations, that when Jesus talked of judge not lest you also be judged, he said, he followed that with, for the standard you use upon others, it will be used upon you. But again, I don't think those words are actually there unless they are in some translations. But if it is in fact that Jesus is bringing up a more universal human standard that is naturally used by us, then it doesn't really matter whether or not we are judging another, judging ourselves, judging God, whatever. Jesus' words apply wherever we are judging another soul. So if you judge yourself, you run afoul of Jesus' own words in your interpretation. In my interpretation, this can apply. Because if you are trying to learn some new skill or do some new thing, like I'm doing right now in Taste of Life, my family's business. Right now, I'm trying to expand our business in a new direction. And I won't go into details, but let's just say that it just fails and fails and fails. And so far, I've had very little traction, but it's also a very new venture. But if it were to fail and fail and fail, then there's a number of explanations that could be true. Perhaps I am not very good at doing what it is that I'm trying to do. That could be accurate. It could also just be that I had the wrong idea about the right way to expand. That could be very true. It's not necessarily a qualitative statement upon my very soul, and this is important. But for me to be honest and say, perhaps it is this and perhaps it is that, and it may very well be true, is a sort of deprecation or a sort of admittance of failure, if you will. But it is also objectively true, and I'm keeping my mind on rational truths rather than going off into some la-la land of just considering myself better for saying that I failed. If I'm simply honest about the fact that this direction is not working, for whatever reason that it's not working, then I free myself up to go do something new, something else, to try something that might actually work. And we'll see where it goes. Such a thing is absolutely possible, and this is a judgment. To judge that this thing is not working, and again, that's not known, I haven't done it long enough to see. But theoretically, hypothetically rather, if it did, well, that would simply be honest, and it would be constructive and helpful. Now, on the other hand, if I was to take myself and simply say, I suck, I'm horrible, I don't deserve this position, and so on and so forth, well, is that true? Now, ironically, there was a point at which that was true, but it isn't now, and I'm very confident of that. I do good work, I get my job done. But if I were simply to do that as if it made me a good person, then my own employers, let me start that again, then what I am essentially saying is that my own employers are idiots for keeping me employed in this position. Am I not? I absolutely am. If I say that I don't deserve to even have this position, that I suck at my job, if I just keep slamming myself and slapping myself across the face, metaphorically, possibly physically, because I can't do this one thing, but just go off into some sort of epileptic seizure of self-deprecation, then what I am really doing by proxy is saying that my employers really had no idea what they were doing. That they're wrong to have hired me in the first place. It's really quite insulting. And once again, judge not lest you also be judged. If I continue to do that, then I'm probably going to be a less motivated employee. And even if those who employed me don't agree with me, well, eventually they're going to start agreeing with me. Why? Because I just keep self-deprecating, self-destroying, and becoming, therefore, lazier and lazier. And eventually, well, they're just going to have to agree because the fact of the matter is I'm negative. I'm becoming more and more lazy. Well, yeah, he's right. He doesn't deserve this position. You're fired. Judge not lest you also be judged. Now let's take this example and put it on a person simply about themselves. In other words, they're not judging their capacity to be doing a job, but they're judging themselves as an individual. If you consider yourself a Christian and you're going around slapping yourself across the face, having continuous fits of self-deprecation, in public and in private, what are you really saying? Are you saying that you're humble? Or are you saying that God made a mistake? If you're no good, if you're just bad material, if you're all kinds of messed up, well, who made you? You're a Christian, right? You believe that God made you. And you're going to call the material that God made that is you crap? You're going to dare to take the handiwork of the Creator himself and say that it's low quality? You're not slapping yourself across the face. You're slapping God himself across the face. What on earth are you doing? And if you persist in that kind of behavior, maybe it's not just other human beings that will eventually agree with you on that point. How much will this really cost you in the end? Self-deprecation as some smarmy, self-aggrandizing, in the humility sense, quasi-religious effort to be a good person, in my opinion, achieves not just the opposite of its stated goal, but even worse. Now, I could end this episode on that note, but I want to talk a little bit about the opposite. And it returns also to material that I have spoken about in the past. Is it therefore good for Christians to be confident in themselves, to understand their value in the eyes of God, to understand their capacities, to understand that they are good material made by God for a specific purpose? That purpose we may not understand, but surely it's good. Surely God, if He created you, did something that was worthwhile, something that was worth His time. The kinds of people who want us to consider ourselves to be crap, are they really the ones who care for our eternal destiny? Who care for our good in the objective sense? Based on the logic that I've just been stating, they simply can't be. There's no way. On the contrary, they want us to destroy ourselves. They want us to insult God. They want us to slap Him in the face and say, "You did a bad job with me." No, on the contrary, to understand what it is we are capable of and to know that we do have value. I don't think it's some quasi-religious idea of eternal value, immeasurable value, or something like that. What I care about is that God cared enough to make you, and that is enough. I don't need to know just how much the value is. I just need to know that the ultimate and infinite creator cared enough to make you and me. And for us, then, to consider ourselves highly, in a sense, and I agree with Paul, not more highly than we ought, but what does that really mean? It doesn't mean lowly, and it certainly doesn't mean more lowly than we ought to. The opposite must also be true to be reasonable, and to be accurate, and to be truthful. To consider ourselves highly, with inaccuracy, rationally, within truth, is to look at God through the lens of ourselves and say, "Yes, you did a good job. Yes, I praise you for making this one human being who is me. Yes, what a magnificent work." And then, of course, you can begin to see that everybody else at least has the potential of embracing that too. I don't mean, again, to hold this perspective that everybody has infinite value. No, everybody has unknown value. Because we don't know what these words mean. If God considers us to have value, how much value is that? I don't know. I don't need to know. I only need to know that the infinite creator gives a crap and took the time. Shouldn't we at least be appreciative of that? In ourselves and others? If you hold that kind of a judgment of yourself and that kind of judgment of others, judge, and that same measure of judgment will be used back upon you. Isn't that exactly the kind of judgment we should be using? If Jesus warned us against judging too hastily, well, if we judge not hastily, but carefully, rationally, truthfully, then that too will be measured back upon us. And anybody who's not willing to take on that kind of judgment will probably distance themselves from us. And that's a good thing. To me, that sounds like a very good world indeed, and a very good life. That's all I had for today. As always, I hope it gives you much to think about. Until next time.